All right, we have our devices rolling, and the floor is yours.
Do this on Zoom.
Yes, Board Member Francis, can you confirm that you can hear us?
Steve Francis can hear you fine.
Thank you.
Welcome to our Public Works meeting. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Thank you. John, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag. Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I just want to acknowledge that Councilwoman Jen Ford, who is our liaison, is here tonight in the audience. Welcome. Are there any announcements that you would wish to make?
Staff does have one announcement, Chair Rogers. We have Derek Hansen here in the room. Derek is a very new engineering tech, graduate of Cal Poly. He's had some experience in the private sector, and he's working on an Arbor Day issue that he'd like to talk briefly about. So, Derek, if you want to come on up to the podium.
Which one? Hello? Ah, there it is. Hello, everyone. The morning of May 10th at Lila Kaiser Park, the morning of May 1st at 10 a.m. at Lila Kaiser Park, the city will be hosting its Arbor Day event, celebrating the 150th anniversary of the holiday, with some coordination from the Maintenance and Recreation Service Department, as well as the volunteer groups Morro Bay Beautiful and Morro Bay in Bloom. We will be planting 7 Monterey cypress trees. It is an open invitation, so if you or anybody you know would like to participate, we'd be happy to see you there. I have business cards I will be dropping off with Greg if you have any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's great. Is there any other public comment?
Hi, Barry. Good evening, Barry Brannon, City of Morro Bay. I'd just like to come and thank all of you on the Public Works Advisory Committee. I know it's kind of an unsung group. You work hard, you read a lot of stuff. And I want you to know that you represent citizens, and I personally appreciate it. I also want you to know that I read all of the staff reports, both City Council, Public Works, every one of them, and they're widely disseminated. So you probably don't hear the applause, but it's there. Thank you.
Great, Barry. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
I don't know. Paul Donnelly,
hey, Paul.
Resident of Morro Bay. I don't know if this is appropriate time to speak on the matter, but I guess it's in your update for the grant money for the Coleman Park. It's under engineering, it's the last page of your staff report. It says it's for the Rural Recreation and Tourist Program. RRT, which is really the Recreational Trails Program issued by the state, California State Parks. In this county, over the years, there's only been about 5 or 6 grants awarded to projects, and they were for trails. This is to do improvements at Coleman Park, which has nothing to do with the trails. And so I'm wondering, what's the likelihood that the city will even get this grant money and why did we waste our time on it? I don't think I've yet to meet anyone in town that is in favor of doing those improvements down at Coleman Park. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone in the queue for public comment?
Thank you, Chair. Let me double check that. Just a moment, please. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's see. Would any board member like to pull an item from the consent agenda? I know, Greg, you said you had...
I'd like to pull the director's update. That was a mistake to have that on the consent this week because I do want to talk about an issue, but then I can also address Mr. Donnelly's question as well.
Okay.
During that update. So at this point, you just want to get a motion for A1.
Okay, good. So let's, I need a motion to approve the minutes from March 16th.
I motion that.
I'll second that.
Great. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, we've approved the minutes.
Could we, I'm sorry, especially because we have board member Francis on the phone, would it be okay if we did a roll call vote?
Oh, okay.
Just for the record, so board member Gaffney?
Aye.
Board member Nava?
Aye.
Board member Beal?
Aye.
Board member Irwin?
Aye.
And board member Francis?
Aye.
And Chair Rogers?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so the minutes are approved. And then, Greg, would you like to do your director's
yeah,
update?
Yeah, and sorry to be bureaucratic, but we would have to request if there's any public comment for that consent item.
For the director's update?
For A1, which was on consent. Yeah, because earlier we did the general public comment, and so we would need to do public comment for consent.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the minutes? Is there anyone in the queue? Okay, hearing none.
Thank you. There are no hands raised in the queue.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's move to A2, which is director's update.
Sure thing. So many of you know that the city experienced a sewer leak in the Cloisters area, something that our operators discovered on Monday, April 11th. I'm very proud of the responsiveness of the utilities crew. Within hours, they had cordoned off the area and contained the spill. We estimate that around 10,000 gallons of raw sewage were spilled into that trench that comes just outside of the storm drain. And then within a few more hours, we had diverted all sewage that's coming from the entire north side west of the highway all the way up to the is that Toro? Am I making that up? Is it Toro? Yes, up to Toro Lane. Thank you. So from Cloisters all the way up to Toro Lane, all sewage is now and still being diverted to three temporary storage tanks that are periodically getting vacuumed out, and then that sewage is being put into our sewer system in other areas of the city safely. The county came out, County Department of Public Health came out, and gave us a thumbs up. There was no contamination outside of the cordoned off area. I do want to clear up a couple of misconceptions that I've been made aware of. One is that the city knew about this issue. That's not true. The city, it was called out in the One Water Plan that this particular force main that is the source of the leak was slated for replacement and upsizing to an 8-inch from a 6-inch diameter pipe, but there was no indication that there was imminent failure on this pipe. In fact, the replacement schedule in the One Water Plan is 2029 to 2040. So we are well before that range. Nevertheless, we are responding to the issue. We're looking at short-term and long-term solutions. And City Engineer Eric Riddio is going to review those in a further presentation down the agenda. The other thing I'd like to mention is that no sewage made it to the ocean or to the pond in the Cloisters. So I just wanted to clear up that misconception as well. The other thing that's part of this update is that we did have to provide for a detour on that bike path and have it go into Cloisters. I included a picture of that in the director's update. The main reason for that, it's not a health thing. It's more that we have those tanker trucks backing up in there. And it could be a dangerous situation because it's very difficult to see, and they're backing up on trails and things like that. So as long as we have those temporary storage tanks there, we will continue to have that detour in place. So the other thing I wanted to mention was what Mr. Donnelly brought up. So that actually is a different grant. There is a roads and trails program that's offered by California Parks and Rec. We applied for the Rural Recreation and Tourism Program. Certainly, different folks are going to have different opinions about grant applications that we put forth. We heard a lot of positive feedback during the two community meetings that we had on site, as well as emails we received from the public, as well as comments we received from the PUAB and the City Council about our intentions there. And I did also see, and I'm sure you all saw, that there was a public comment that came in through email, indicating that the proposed concept plan or conceptual plan included some things that would limit access to the kayaking and to the stand-up paddleboarding. And I just want to clear up that confusion as well. As was made clear in the PWAB presentation and the City Council presentation, our intention or plan, we have no plans to limit access to any of those activities. I think this goes back to, and this is probably our mistake, but when we offered that conceptual plan, if you remember, we included all the amenity options. We just threw everything on the map. Not that we wanted any of those things in any specific locations, but we just wanted to give examples of what sorts of amenities could exist in that park. And so that is not intended to be some kind of future vision or proposal for what that park will look like in the future, particularly to those locations. But we did have someone who was posting that conceptual plan actually out there. And I think there was a note on it saying something like, is this what you want the park to look like? And it didn't have all that other context that was given at the PWAB and the City Council meeting. So I have been in touch with that individual who made that comment. Pam and I plan on meeting with them. And so we are interested in hearing what their ideas for the park are. So again, we are an open book on this. We want to continue to engage with folks. But in the meanwhile, we are applying for grant funding. And the way grant funding works oftentimes is you put out some ideas and some concepts, and you see what money you can get. And when the money comes in, then we have to make the hard decisions about what to do with that money. And Pam's going to talk a little bit about that during her presentation. So that concludes my director's update, and I'll take any questions.
Do you have an estimate on the sewage leak and the repairs and getting that all back to normal?
Yeah, a cost estimate?
No, I was thinking more of timelines, but I suppose at some point we'll want to consider both.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. So I'll let Eric answer that during his presentation. He's going to go more in depth into some of the solutions that we're looking at, and he'll talk about timelines there. Yes.
A couple things. I know that Rob Livick had his style for this director's update, and when we talked several months ago, you were planning on making some sort of changes on how it's done. Do you have any vision on how you want to do the director's update? Are you going to kind of go through a summary of things, or are you going to pick something which you're going to highlight? I just was wondering.
Thank you for your question, Board Member Irwin. You're right, and you are looking at the vision. So my idea of a relevant update to the PWAB and to the public is to provide an overview of some of the highlights of what the divisions in our department are doing. We want to move away from this kind of very granular, detailed, we put this much asphalt down, and because that there's no real story there. In my view, and in talking with members of the PWAB, that's not appropriate to discuss. Just in so far as that's a matter of operations. I'm certainly, if you have any questions, I'm certainly available to answer those questions about any kind of operational matters that we have, the day-to-day routine stuff. We try to point out in the director's update things that, bigger picture stuff that's going on with our department.
You know, one of the things which I found helpful is, you know, I've got a mental checklist of unfunded requirements and, you know, critical things you're working on. And it's nice to hear what you think are the critical things you're going to be working on for the next month or so. Just, you know, like a sentence maybe, if that. And then the other thing is, how's the replacement process for Eric's spot on the PWAP?
That's a good question. Let me check in with the city clerk on that last one. I'm not sure. I haven't heard an update on that yet. And thank you for your input on the director's report.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Now, let me just make a note that, as I understand it, the idea is that the department update is released with the minutes, and we have a chance to look at that ahead of time. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to kind of keep these meetings from dragging on as we go through an awful lot of little details, which is what Greg was talking about. So there are, you know, that information is available with the agenda.
Okay. Oh, it would be nice to get hard copies of the agenda here so we don't have to think. It takes about 5 minutes for my printer to print something, so I'd rather avoid that if I can.
We can do that.
Thank you.
And we'll need, Chair, we'll need to take public comment for this item.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, for the director's update, we want to see if there's any public comment. Is there anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we're going to move on to the Section B, the business items. And again, I'll ask if there are any public comment. Okay, Barry.
Maybe you went over this, and I guess there's a future report, but the three questions, and maybe Ms. Beal announced them. So you're going to give us a report on the potential daily cost on the leak, and the number two, the source of funds for those leaks, and number three, the timeline. Is that coming in the future?
Yes, that's going to come during Eric's report. I think that's item two in the business section.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Item three, sorry.
Okay, are there any other people in the queue?
Thank you. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's move to EV charging station. And does staff have a presentation?
Yes, Chair, thank you. We have Pam Newman, who's been working on this project. She will present.
Hi there, thank you. So I do have a presentation for the EV chargers in the city, and I'm just going to go ahead and get right in there. There are currently three locations being proposed. One of them is at the Delmar parking lot off Ironwood. And there are two other ones off Embarcadero Road, 1205 and 1265. Just a little summary. I'll start with Delmar parking lot. There are five electrical vehicle chargers that serve two parking lots each, so there'll be 10 parking spaces. They do include as well one van accessible space and one standard accessible space. And just a little background, Zero Impact Solutions is the company that is doing the plans and the installation, as well as the administration and cost collection. Currently, they have submitted the building permit plans, and they were in the design review process. This is a sample of them. And we are waiting on a resubmittal because we did give them back comments. The first of the Embarcadero ones, the first one is at 1205 Embarcadero. It is at the restroom by the Harbor Department building. It will serve, it's two electrical chargers. Let's see. Oh, I think I have this backwards. I apologize. It's one electrical charger that will serve two spaces. And it's accessible, so it'll be one bollard with two port charging. And it is also van accessible and standard accessible. A little bit background on both of these. These were part of the Slo County Community Air Protection Program. It was a grant that was awarded to the city for $17,387. We did go back to the company Turnkey to get an updated estimate cost, because there was some new prices that have come up. And the grant is in the process of being reviewed, because APCD does believe that we will be able to get some more funding to match the cost that of the project. We went through Sourcewell Cooperative Purchasing Contract and decided to go with Turnkey Construction and Solar. The updated cost that they gave us recently was $43,000 to $45,000, and that was based on their installation, the equipment at about $30,242, and another $5,000 to $7,000 for PGE fees for reviewing and their input. There's a minor reoccurring cost as well. At the moment, Turkey Construction is completing the plans and will begin the PG&E review process after the city reviews and approves. This is where they were backwards as far as the electrical chargers. The other location is at 1265 Embarcadero. It is actually two electrical chargers and will be serving four spaces. Again, they're mounted on the bollards, and each bollard will serve two of those spaces. So it's a total of four. It will also have a accessible parking lot, but it's only one side. Similar background as before, they both of the Embarcadero chargers were part of the APCD grant, but they were separate submittals, so they were awarded separately. This one was for $8,300, and it was the same purchasing contract and Turnkey Construction. We have an estimated listed $20,690 plus the estimated PG&E fees, and it's the same status that Turnkey Construction is in the process of completing plans and beginning with the PG&E review. We are also looking to increase the grant for this part as well. So if anyone has any questions, I'll take them. Yes.
I was just curious how you selected those particular sites.
So these were reviewed by our former maintenance superintendent, Mike Wilcox, and I believe he and Rob Leivick were the ones who reviewed and identified these locations.
And also for the ones going into Del Mar, we submitted, I think, eight locations as part of a grant application. I believe that was the Cal EVIP program. Back in August, we had a tight timeline to submit those. So we selected locations based on, you know, where people might use them, but also where we thought PG&E already had sufficient power going. And that was done between me and Rob Leivick at the time. And so far, the only one that's been picked up by that grant program was the Del Mar location, but we're told other locations may come through with grants as well.
Is there a long-term service contract with the installation of these, or is that going to be up to city public works people?
I can do it. So it is first 2 years fall under both of these, and they're part of the fees. The Embarcadero has an ongoing fee that it's not a contract. It just gets renewed every year. The Del Mar is a company that's installing it. has an extension that also intakes the costs. So they're there's no cost to the city. They take in the fees and it pays for it. So as far as contract with them, I don't believe there's one in place just yet.
I was thinking in terms of vandalism or just general wear and tear of the system and cleaning.
Yeah, for Zero Impact Solutions, we do have a maintenance contract there. I don't remember how long it is, if it's 3 or 5 years. But then that's something we would renegotiate at the end of the term.
Also, I gathered that their solar system going in with this, is there a life cycle on that should be considered, or is that something that will be on the city to update when the time comes?
I'm actually not familiar with the specific equipment itself. I haven't a chance to look at it a little bit more detail, so I'm not familiar with the solar portion of it or the maintenance of that. And I'm assuming this is for the Embarcadero one, or is it the Del Mar as well? Because I'm not familiar with solar being part of it.
Well, it looks like PG&E is going to bill us $21,000 for these two locations. So what are they doing?
So they do a review and have to, I guess, see where they can grab the power from and do their engineering portion of it. You know, it's very costly. PG&E, yeah.
Is there any sort of relationship with the Central Coast Community Electric program?
Not on these projects that I'm aware. That's a JPA that we're a member of. I know I'm aware that they have incentive programs and grants and things like that. But the Cal EVIP is through the state, and the ones at the Embarcadero through the APCD.
Just to be clear, so the revenue that it creates, is that goes to like turnkey, or does that city, or a little bit of both, or?
So the revenue at Turnkey, they have an extension called Evolve, and they handle the fees, and it's basically paying back for the investment that they've put into the city. So there's no upfront cost. So that's how they're getting their money back.
How's it paid off?
I'm sorry?
What is the expected payoff time?
I am not aware of that. I don't think that we got that, or I had that.
Yeah, and it sounds like we're getting a lot of questions from the board about kind of the specifics of revenue. We were interested in bringing these items to the board just to get any input on location, or if you have any other ideas about where we could put them, or if it's a bad idea to put them at these locations. If the board wants us to come back with that kind of detailed, you know, contract and like information about the contract and revenues and things like that, we'd be happy to do that. We could do that at a later meeting.
I guess the Del Mar one there, it's central to the local, you know, to the residents in the area there. But who would normally use a EV charging station like that? It sounds like if someone has an electric car in North Morro Bay, they're likely to have the infrastructure in their house just to charge up their car, and they're not going to drive over to a park to charge up.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Chair Irwin. I think three drivers exist at that location. It's a residential area. Presumably, if someone owned an electric car, they'd have their own charger. Someone may not own an electric car or a charger, but may have a guest that comes over, and then that those chargers would be available for that person. Also, there's a school there that has a lot of employees. There's a church, a large church, I believe it's on Ironwood, it's within walking distance. And then of course the park itself, you know, parents can take their kids to the park for several hours and then they could charge up their car while they're doing that. The other piece of it is we've been identified as a dry spot for chargers, Morro Bay. I don't even think we have a commercial property that has a charger on it. And so we used to have chargers, as I understand it, at City Hall. It's before I was here, but those were taken out because that company went out of business. And so we wanted to be responsive to that need as well, just to get some chargers here. So if someone needed a charge, they'd have a place to do it.
Is there any plans to possibly put a charger around City Hall then?
Potentially, yes, but it would be grant funded. It would have to be grant funded, really, to fund this sort of thing. And there is a lot of money out there and incentives, as you know. So,
I have a follow-up question on what you were just saying about Del Mar. If you're anticipating people going there to park to take advantage of the chargers, do you think there's a need to study any parking impacts for parking availability for park users? And so it sounds like potentially relocating parking.
Thank you, Board Member Beal. And again, a good question. Interestingly, with those chargers, we're going to include signs that say something to the effect of you don't need to have an electric car to park here. So those are not dedicated parking spots for folks with electric cars or folks who want to charge. So we don't think that the impact is going to be too great. It's something we'll be monitoring, and certainly would love to hear from the public once they are installed to see how that's going.
As for the locations, I do think that Del Mar makes sense as far as like the space, but as far as like the incentive, I think to have charging stations, we want, you know, which they would be mainly for tourists. We want them to park the car, sit for 2 hours, and walk and spend money in the community. So I think the more centrally located chargers, like the Embarcadero, makes a lot more sense, or downtown areas. To actually bring, you know, not only revenue for the charging station, but revenue to the neighboring, you know, businesses, is my suggestion.
Thank you for that feedback.
Okay, any other comments?
Public comment.
Public comment? Tremendous problem. Parking on Embarcadero is a major problem. And if I were the business owner that owned the Harbor Hut, I would be very incensed that you would take the prime parking places. He has a lot of people just come buy some chowder and go, and you're going to take up their key parking places right there in front of the Harbor Hut, where you have a parking place across the triangle parking, you have restrooms, and people leave their cars for 2 hours, and it would be a tremendous impact to those kind of businesses on the harbor. They try to get some revenue. The city receives money from them. The harbor department is starving for money. And to exclude those key parking places from those businesses is just inconscionable. Is there anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay. So thank you. Let's move on to section B2, which is the sewer line repair. And before we start that, would there be any public comment on this item? And is there anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in
the
queue.
Okay, great. Well, do we have a staff presentation?
We do. I'm pleased to present our new city engineer, Eric Riddio, who will talk about sewer line repair in the Cloisters area.
Good evening, members of the board, public. Eric Riddio, city engineer. I've been here about a month and a half, and this among many other things, it's been a full few weeks, so I do appreciate the opportunity to be here presenting. I don't have a formal PowerPoint presentation for this item, but it is an item I've been intimately involved with over the last few days, as well with Damaris in responding and coming up with a plan to both short-term and long-term to mitigate this circumstance. I will present a couple thoughts and some of the things that we are doing, but then I will ask for any questions that you have, because you probably have some very specific questions that hopefully I can answer for you. So, This leak, as Greg had presented earlier was addressed in a timely fashion. Immediately, our staff has taken action to inspect the line. There was some video inspection done within a day of the leak being found. They did find the area where we believe the leak, at least the majority, this leak was due to. It's an actual hole in the line. So the video equipment was not able to get past this area, so it wasn't until today that they were able to come and look at the other side, which is off of Main Street through a manhole at Las Vegas. The staff were able to remove a 90-degree elbow there and jet the line to further clear it to be able to get the video equipment through. So we've come up with a few different short-term proposed solutions, and as I mentioned, the situation is fluid. So our short-term option up until about an hour and a half ago was to do what's called a CIPP repair. It's a cured in place, a sectional repair of the line. It basically inserts a sleeve into the area and it cures the material in place to the parent material to bridge any leak areas. Upon further inspection of the line today, it's believed that the line does have some other areas of concern. So our new or updated thought is to insert a smaller diameter pipe, a 4 or 5 inch line. We're still working through that now, and inserting the line through that as a conduit to be able to tie into the existing manhole and get the force main back in operation. Our hope is to have that done by next week. We are actively looking at contractors that can do the repairs. We did have a contractor in place to do the work next Tuesday for this CIPP, but it may not be the preferred solution at this point. As far as long-term solutions, we're also looking at those. So, and what that involves is a little bit more thought for replacing the line. As the director had discussed earlier, this is something that was identified in the One Water, but for a time a little bit further out than the city anticipated, but we are forced to look at it a long-term solution in the near term. So we have included a long-term solution in the budget proposal. As you may or may not know, we're going through the budget process right now, which will be going to council sometime in June. So we're looking at different options, which involve some of the different technologies are technologies that are being used in the current conveyance project with the wharf project, like the jack and bore or micro-tunneling, or a technology called horizontal directional drilling, which would, if you're probably aware, that the line spans underneath Highway 1, and there's very limited options that are trenchless. So trenchless mean you don't actually dig a trench, because that just being able to do that on a Caltrans route would be is just not an option with Caltrans, or it'd be it's just not a viable option. So these trenchless technologies are the preferred option for this. So we're looking at those. The short-term solution is definitely the higher priority. So we're looking to get this back in operation soon, so that we can get off of the bypass, which is currently putting the wastewater into the tanks that are on site. So, I'll go ahead and entertain questions at this point. It'll probably
just add one question, like real quick. Do you know the kind of guesstimate of where the actual break is, like under Highway 1?
We do. The video equipment is pretty advanced that our staff have. It turns out it's right between the number one and two lanes on the southbound.
So right in the middle.
Right in the middle of the highway.
And is that a like a steel pipe, concrete pipe, Orangeburg ABS? What type of existing pipe is in there?
It's a cast iron pipe, and the pipe was there before the highway was built, believe it or not. So, the video was viewed by some of the contractors we were discussing with, some of them said, "Wow, that is in actually really good shape for its age." So, but cast iron. I don't know too much about cast iron, but it was probably one of the more common pipe types at that time.
Do we know when the last time that particular pipe was videoed or anything? Or
I do not know when it was videoed. The Cloisters pump station was upgraded at some time in the 90s. Where that pipe was, there was an existing inline pump station, and then during the development, a new pump station was built, and the line was tapped into with a couple of fittings to come off, but the existing line was utilized at that time. There was a question about cost, we have a truck that's hauling the waste and discharging the waste into a manhole on Main Street, just north of San Jacinto. The area is secured with traffic control, with cones and pylons, or I'm sorry, the actual delineators. There you go. So that the truck can pull up and pull away in a safe manner, but it's between $5,000 and $10,000 a day with the hourly cost of the drivers, and then the rental of the equipment. So it is in our interest to get the force main back in operation, or to have a short-term solution soon. So we're working on that with our staff.
What do you have to process the sewage in order to pump it through a 3-inch force main? If you use that solution,
would you have to? I'm sorry.
Would you have to grind up the sewage in order to make sure it doesn't plug the 3-inch pipe?
Yeah, it'd probably be at least a 4-inch pipe, 4 to 5 inch. There doesn't seem to be an issue with pumping through a 4-inch conduit, at least in consult with our engineering team.
Okay. I know that since that's 200 feet from my house, and most days when we go for a walk on Main Street, you know, you usually smell some sort of sewage. So that's been probably happening there a little bit for a while then. So it sounds like there was a hole punched in the pipe. Was that what was happening, or do they think it was just wear?
So are you talking on Main Street where the trucks are discharging, or?
Well, no, I just, yesterday as I went for my walk, I saw the guy going into the confined space process to, you know, figure out what was going on there. But okay. In that spot there, there's been a sewer order for at least 4 or 5 years that I know of.
Well, the manhole that this force main dumps into has a 90 elbow that drops down into the conveyance trough. Yeah, I'm not aware of any issues with
that's a gravity. That's a gravity main at that point, then, where it feeds.
Where it dumps into the manhole, it then feeds into the gravity main. Okay. On Main Street.
If I could interject too, actually, we have Damaris Hansen here, who I know had some role in investigating those odors that were brought up in the past. And as far as I'm aware, the city did atmospheric testing and didn't find anything. But do you want to give some detail to that, Damaris? And the date of those tests, I believe it was August of 2021?
Yeah, you're right, in August of 2021. When you brought it up to us before, so they did put an odor logger in there, and they tested it for hydrogen sulfide. And the storm drain did not have it, but the sewer main did, but it wasn't high levels.
Okay, yeah, I just was wondering, you know, most people, our neighbors noticed something going on there for several years now, but I just was wondering what, if it was tied to that, or if it's just the fact that that's where the force main dumps into the sewer then. Okay.
Yeah, the actual leak is on the other side of the freeway, so 50 feet from the west side of basically the right of way of Caltrans right of way.
And so it's in the pipe itself and not a joint, is what you're saying?
That's correct. It looks like it's very hard to determine based on the video, and being that it's a 6-inch line, it's very small. Considering there's much larger pipelines, but it looks like there's something, possibly a rock or some type of debris that was underneath the pipe when it was placed, and of course you have the freeway that was put in, or the highway, at some time, and two 24-inch storm drains that go over the line right at that point. So we're not certain of the cause, but it's certainly suspect that that's it could have caused something. Of course, you know, the leak did not become apparent until recently when it was seen coming out of the storm drain.
Okay.
I'll just add too that our utilities crews do inspections of that lift station every Monday and Thursday, and so they discovered this leak coming out of the storm drain when there was no rain on Monday morning of last week. They had been there Thursday in the previous week, and there was no such leak. So I just wanted to point out that we believe at this time that the substantial leak that we saw happened sometime between two Thursdays ago and last Monday.
With it being a pressure line, was Caltrans notified that there could be undermining or to inspect their storm drain system again?
Caltrans was notified throughout the process of when the leak was found. That day they had their culvert maintenance individual came out and inspected right away. And through this process, I've been in communication with both the permits engineer and the field staff, the field permits folks about our process and our proposed solutions.
One last question for this. Was any consideration given to a new line that would be trenched towards the high school rather than try and take the other route of trenchless under the state route through the state right away? Maybe you'd save some money on not having to go trenchless.
We are looking at several different options, and that is one. The issue of a trenchless across, it's the shortest distance, and cost of trenchless is actually I can't compare the two at this point because we haven't run the cost of a trench, but given that we have an easement in Caltrans and that we can move fairly quickly on the design, it would be easier design as far as we know we have the easement, we know we have the right of way. When you look at going to the south, not certain of the right of way and the type of alignment that that pipeline would have to take at that point.
Other than an encroachment permit, there'd be no other permitting issues to use the existing alignment. That's what your design would entail. You wouldn't necessarily have to get environmental permitting to do a trenchless operation.
That's something we'll be in consultation with our engineer about. But it seems that it'd be the preferred option since it's already in place and we're just basically replacing the line. And that's what has been called out in the One Water Plan as far as future replacement of that line.
Are there any conflicts with the Cayucas force main there?
I don't believe there are. We'd have to look at that when we do the design of receiving the line on the other side for the long-term option. So if there is if horizontal direction drilling is the long-term option, the positioning of the line and where it came into the land hole would have to be considered in relation to other utilities.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions?
Any other comments? Is there anyone in the queue for public comment?
Thank you, Chair. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, then let's move on to B3, which is a Caltrans Highway 1 project. Is there a staff presentation?
Thank you, Chair. Indeed, there is. Mr. Eric Riddio will be presenting on this item as well.
Okay, thank you.
As soon as he gets set up.
Thank you. Shift gears here. I met with Caltrans fairly recently to discuss a project that will be coming through Morro Bay, not in the near term, but in the next 5 years or so. Similar to what's happened north of Morro Bay and also to the south, Caltrans will be through the SHOP program upgrading the pavement on Highway 1 through Morro Bay. As I mentioned, SHOP stands for State Highway Operations Protection Program. It's a project. It's part of the Highway Systems Fix It First program that funds repair and preservation, emergency repairs, safety improvements, and some highway operational improvements. The improvements will mainly be pavement restoration, from San Luisito Road just to the south, Morro Bay, to 24th Street in Cayucas. So this meeting that I had with Caltrans was the project initiation, where they outreached to local partners, City of Morro Bay being one of those. They hope to finalize their meetings with local partners in July, and one of the asks is that if there's anything as far as local projects or anything we'd like to see added to the project within reason. Again, this is not a new construction, but this is upgrading or making repairs to existing infrastructure. Their plan is to finalize the what's called the PID, project initiation document, in August, and with design to be finished in sometime in 2025 and construction in 27 and 28. As I mentioned, the alignment starts south of South Bay at that intersection with San Luisito Road, and then all the way up north of Morro Bay to the south end of Cayucas at 24th Street, just before the first off-ramp. The scope of the project: maintenance and replacement of deteriorating roadway features, so which is predominantly the pavement. It's what I call mill and fill, which is basically grinding and replacing existing pavement down to about 2 inches. This is in tenths of a foot, but this is roughly 1.8 inches to 2.5 inches. It would also replace the rumble strips on the side, if you're familiar with those, that alert you when you're going into the shoulder or the bike lane, and also the striping. The project will upgrade freeway lighting as well, with LED fixtures, mainly at the off-ramps where there are existing features. I don't believe it will install new lighting where there is an existing. It will also replace an improved guardrail. There's guardrail up just north, I think, of South Bay or at that interchange in other areas. It will replace the sign panels with improved retroreflective signage. And then another benefit of this project is installing ADA curb ramps at pedestrian facilities in the right-of-way. So that includes the underpass at Main Street, and then I would also I also mentioned that if there's any sidewalk issues, we would look to ask for that to be a part of this project at that time, since we do have two sidewalks, I believe, that go under Main Street. It would upgrade ADA ramps, or install actual ADA ramps, at San Jacinto. And I know that at Yerba Buena there are some ramps, but it would, if they're needed to be upgraded, it would upgrade those as well. Items and other options for discussion with Caltrans. They did make it apparent they want to have a discussion, and for the city, and I did mention to them that I'd be bringing this to the PWAB, so we're looking for your input. But some things we discussed internally already were looking at high visibility style crosswalks at those signalized intersections, the typical standard crosswalks. The high visibility would be especially in when at night, provide added reflectivity to cars. For pedestrian traffic, audible push buttons would be a good feature for in in looking at ADA addition of bicycle loops, if not already in place. We do have a lot of a cycling community that likes to use Highway 1 and then the cross streets. Striping improvements, maybe the green conflict striping. This is one thing that they have conveyed. Caltrans will not maintain certain features, but they may consider installing it with a project. So in my experience, Caltrans still shies away from maintaining green conflict striping. They don't have the ability to, but it may come at some point where they will maintain it. But that's something we would have to discuss in this. And then if there are other local funded projects, I know that we're looking to do concrete improvement and our own pavement management projects. But if there's streets, you know, I think of Main Street, it's close in proximity. If there's things we can do that may extend outside of this, but since they have a contractor on board, maybe we could add portions. We would probably need to supply the funding, but look at, because of economies of scale, if they've already got a contract. Those are potentially things that Caltrans would entertain. And then we wanted to ask the PWAB if you had any input. I'm prepared to note down some ideas, and even if you don't have them now, I would like to hear from you, and you can reach out to me at any time. So I have one other slide, and then we can talk through those. So the next steps are to finalize a list for Caltrans consideration. We can discuss tonight some options, and then hopefully by June, July, present them with a list for a meeting with Caltrans in August. And then September, October of 2022, it's estimated that they would report back what items they would either carry forward or they would fund, or they would ask for us to provide a portion or funding for. So any questions or any items you'd like to?
Yeah, I've got a few things which popped into my head. One of the issues I can remember seeing is the sidewalks for the Tascadero Road underpass at 41 very likely don't meet the ADA requirements for smoothness and stuff like that. I mean, seeing as how the looks like it's been there close to 40 years and there are no fines left in the surface there. There probably ought to be something there to fix that. Has there been any discussion about how the new hotel there or motel on 41 at the high school? They're obviously going to be putting in some curb and gutter in that area. Is there going to be any coordination between Caltrans and this project for making sure that there's no things overlooked there? There is at Main Street in 41, there's a handicap ramp there, but it's probably has about 4 inches of sand in it right now from drainage issues on 41 and Main Street. I'm not sure where the sand's coming from, but it's basically is filled up the gutter there, and it's not clear that the drainage is working properly at that location there. It's on the northeast corner of 41 and Main. And
thank you for bringing Atascadero to my attention. That is part of the scope as well. I did leave that out by mistake, and they did mention and have questions about our intersection improvements at 41 and 1 and Main Street. So they would like to know, certainly before they design, what our plans are there. So I think that's a priority project for the city to move forward with a design at some point, and whether this project would, it is our hope to have the intersection improvements done before this project would come through.
So, are we going to see any money from SACOG for that intersection?
From SLOCOG?
Yeah.
Yeah, SLOCOG does have money earmarked for the city for that project. There are some there's definitely a deficiency of funding that we need to look at other grant opportunities. That would be when we'd look to go to construction. We do have funding to move forward with the rest of the project approval and environmental document phase, which we're in currently, and then actual design of the improvements, which would be after that phase is wrapped up.
And one of the questions I have in my head there is at Yerba Buena on the northwest corner of Yerba Buena and Highway 1, there's a handicap ramp there which probably doesn't meet ADA requirements. Would they be looking to correct any ADA deficiencies?
Yeah, my plan was to bring forth anything that we have concerns about, and if those currently do not meet ADA, yes, they would be required.
You need, I mean, was it, looks like about a 6-foot drop and 10 feet, 15 feet along the curb and gutter there as you go around the return. So that's, you know, it's easier to walk on the street than it is on the sidewalk there. So I was just...
On the west side?
Of the northwest corner there.
Yeah, I know what you're referring to. I believe there could be wrong. There could be a handrail there, but I'm not certain. Yeah. But that would have to be looked at as part of this project.
Okay, but those are the things that I saw come. Will there be any sort of adaptation? I know what they were talking about putting a roundabout at San Jacinto at some point too, but that's probably 10, 15 years down there, if I know how that stuff works.
I'm not aware of the timing of any improvements at San Jacinto, but it'd probably be well beyond this project.
And then the other thing there was some Native American issues with 41 Main Street and State Route 1, which were also impacting the funding for that roundabout. I was wondering if there's been any progress with resolving those issues.
I'll jump in there and just generally I'll say that we're okay, but the nature of those sorts of investigations are confidential, and that it's not mm-hmm. something that we can disclose in a public meeting, but we didn't run into anything that delayed our project. So,
good. Thank you.
Other comments?
I have a couple questions. Are there any stormwater improvements that are going to be needed, or that you guys are thinking about for this project? Has there ever been thought of adding any kind of sound barriers?
Thank you for the questions. As far as stormwater improvements, I don't believe that is part of the scope, but I can certainly ask about that.
I don't know that it's needed. I'm sort of more asking you that if there are issues, that it seems like it'd be an appropriate time to make any upgrades.
And then as far as sound barriers, yeah, that is outside of the scope of this project. It would be new construction, but I can certainly bring forth that concern and see what the response would be.
At a recent meeting, we talked about pavement rehabilitation down there by the Chevron and Taco Bell area. How will that be staged or I should say scheduled with the project coming through by Caltrans and then the future of that intersection of 41 and Main Street? Is there a chance to partner up and maybe see some benefit in economy of scale with the paving operation there 5 years from now?
Thank you for the question. We plan to move forward with this the project to do the dig outs of failed areas. So time is of the essence to get those mitigated soon, and that is this year. But as far as any major improvements like the intersection improvements, you know, if timing could be at the same time and look at some kind of partnership, it'd be like you said, it'd be something to look at as far as economies of scale. I'd have to look at the number of digouts in the area that you're referring to right there at Main and 41. I believe there are some areas that are pretty significant, but I think because of the immediate need, we need to address those sooner than this project would come through.
I just have one comment about possibly the lighting. Maybe we could add lighting. I don't know. Maybe that would kind of detour some homeless along there. Maybe brighter lights. I don't know. Just a thought.
Uh-oh. My thought was sometimes when you replace with LED, it can be too bright. I've heard that complaint. Bad for the bats.
Yeah.
So are you looking at specific areas when you say lighting? Like,
like under, for instance, the Morbay Boulevard exit, you know, where homeless like to kind of tuck under the bridge, you know, like, you know, not 20 feet down all the way, but maybe just some kind of real dark areas where, you know, they're waiting for the trees to grow so they can kind of climb back in those spots. Maybe something to kind of think about.
I think that would be worthy for consideration. Also, concurrently considering if there's any wildlife impacts to that kind of.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Are there any public comments in the queue?
Thank you. I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Steve, Francis, any comments on this?
Yes, I have a couple observations about improvements on this route. One of them deals with northbound Highway 1 at San Jacinto. When cars make right turns there, they have green light, make a right turn. There's still going 35 or so, making the headed eastbound on San Jacinto, and cars are waiting to access the intersection northbound, southbound, and westbound. Many times I've seen cars almost get hit as they're aimed northbound trying to queue up to cross Highway 1, and a car northbound on Highway 1 makes the corner real quick, and cars have to scurry to get out of the way. One of my proposals, which may fit this package, is have a no right turn on red northbound at San Jacinto, allowing then cars on the east side of the highway, basically protected access protected access to queue up to be able to cross the intersection. The second item I've got is relates to a site clearance issue at the stop sign at when you're on Highway 1 taking the Main Street exit southbound into downtown. You go clear up to the stop line, and there's not enough site clearance through the underpass to avoid maybe incidents with a car going the speed limit because you can't see them beforehand. So those are two areas that could use some work. I don't know if convex or cave mirrors would help provide some better visibility there. That's it.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, I'll just respond. Thank you for the suggestions. As far as northbound at San Jacinto, I know that very well because I turn there every day. And yes, the right turn lane is very short. I think at Yerba Buena as well. So either extending those right turn lanes or like you had suggested, a no right turn on red. Those are some suggestions I can bring forth to Caltrans. As far as the site distance at the southbound off-ramp at Main, I think we probably all have turned there as well. I believe that's something I can present as well if there's any type of solutions. Geometrically, there aren't any changes as part of this project, but we can certainly present those and see if they're, whether it's this project or a traffic operations and safety type of solution for that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I think we're done with our business items. Thank you. Let's move on to future agenda items. And do any board members have other items that they would like to see on the agenda?
I do. I'd like to have an idea of what sort of capital improvement projects are in the queue, just not details and stuff like that, but especially where it might impact the cities, you know, the residences, what's going on, what do they have to, what are that's coming up there, and, you know, like we awarded a contract is always nice to hear. Pavement management plan. I'm a broken record on that, I guess, but we really do need a to keep it in the city council's sight where they can say, okay, this is, you know, our biggest problem right now, funding wise, except, you know, this nice little pump station issue there. Looks like it's going to easily change that. But we really do need to start have discussions about what are we going to do. And especially one of the things which really was important to the residents was like when you do have a get ready to award the annual payment project, Let the residents know what streets are going to be worked on, because it's been 4 years now since we've done anything like that, and it's getting kind of silly. And yeah, those are things which I'd like to see kind of addressed in a future agenda item. But by far the most important one is pavement.
Good. Thank you, John. Lori? Robert?
With all of our stormwater being on the surface, I'd be curious to know what sort of regulations the city has to meet for stormwater runoff and landscape waste and building construction waste. Every time there's a rain event, I see our streets get covered in sand and rocks and gravel from the runoff being all on the surface. So that just puts more work, I think, on the Public Works Department to come out and sweep the streets. And those rocks and gravel on the pavement probably aren't doing much good for the surface of the pavement either, as wear and tear goes. So I'd be curious to find out a little bit more of what the city's obligations are for dealing with surface groundwater. I'm sorry, surface stormwater.
I believe most of that sand which we're seeing there comes from the Cape Seal. That we put on there. There's a lot of sand in that, and generally, it feeds the sand down at the bottom of the streets along North Main.
I ride my bike and walk around a lot of the Heights area, and I see the water that runs into people's yards carrying material down from their landscaping and parking areas, and I see a lot of gravel and rocks come down with that stormwater and just hang out on Kern and some of the other streets below that after rain events, and a lot of it ends up in our roundabout right in front of the gas stations as well. A lot of sand and sediment. So I'd just be curious what the city's big plan is for dealing with this.
Maybe we could take a look at the One Water Plan, too. There is a stormwater element to that, which should be addressing that.
Okay. Ian?
No, thank you. Nothing right now.
Steve Francis?
No future agenda ideas up my sleeve.
Okay, thank you.
There was one other thing which popped in my head, and I harassed Rob about it, but there really should be, as part of the budgeting process, a list of unfunded requirements from Public Works, at least so the council is aware of what's not getting done and why it's not getting done. But that would be like an annual type thing as part of the budgeting process.
I appreciate your comments, Advisory Board Member Irwin. Actually, something Eric and I have been talking about lately is, how do we convey on a regular basis status updates about our capital projects? I don't think we're going to be putting unfunded projects into the budget this year, but it is certainly something that we can compile and bring to the PWAB and possibly City Council as well. So we'll include that in our discussion.
It definitely, if you're going to have an unfunded project and you're not going to do it just to protect yourself from the liability of that stuff, then you should at least say, we know we can't get to it. And that way, if someone sues you for not doing what you're supposed to do, at least you have, it's not a surprise to anybody.
Your comment is appreciated.
I do remember some time ago we did, there was a worksheet for capital improvement priorities, and that format I thought was very good. Even if it's done as an addendum to the agenda, so that at least we can look at it. I just thought that was useful, and I think that's what John is alluding to. So, okay, without further ado, let's see, there are some the water equivalency unit allocations, of course, is on this list, sidewalk repair project, Robert, and of course the tree issue, which I thought I was quite interested in Derek's comment earlier about Monterey Cypress. Okay, because that fits right in with the tree replacement issues, so... we've got a whole bunch of agenda items, which we may be able to place on May and June. I'm not sure how much we can get done in those two meetings.
Yeah, and I'll just comment, Chair, that the water equivalency unit item, we are obligated to bring by June by the municipal code. Those other items, some of those we've been kicking the can down the road just because of other priorities. We'd really like to take the tree replacement plan to the PWAB soon, because we did lose a lot of trees as part of the conveyance project, and we haven't replaced them yet. And without going into too much detail, because it's not an item for tonight, but we are cognizant of that, and we do have challenges about where to place new trees. That's counterintuitive, but we actually struggle to find locations at times. So it's something we'd be excited to bring to this board.
Okay, thank you. Well, I guess I'll call if there's any, is there any public comment on?
Because that's not a business item and we've already done general
public
comment.
Okay, we don't need to call for, okay, good. Well, then I think we've reached our adjournment. Thank you all for participating. And the time looks like it's not quite 7 o'clock, so we've done very well tonight. Congratulations, everybody.
6:56 for the record.
Thank you for the presentations. It was helpful.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Our next meeting is going to be Wednesday, May 18th. And hopefully we'll be live and in person here again. Okay, I declare this meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.